I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hey, my name is Kaba. I am a singer-songwriter from London. There was a moment that I realised that I could sing-ish. It was absolute trash, but I've sort of recognised that there was some ability there and that I just needed to go to singing lessons. So I did. And luckily for me, I went to a performing arts school where they gave us singing lessons for free because my mum couldn't afford singing lessons. So I would go there in between my lunch or after school for half an hour. And between that and the school choir, that's how I sort of learned how to sing, really. So yeah, there was never really a point. And also because I went to school with people that were so talented, there was never a point in time where I was like, wow, I can sing better than you, because everyone could sing better than me, actually. Yeah. So at 16, we did a school talent show that my MD put together. And my MD at the time, Andy Gilbert, who is a phenomenal man, has done so much work with people that look like me and you. He has got a lot of connections in the music industry. So he sort of called a few managers, labels, etc., to come and watch us through this talent show. And we had done something similar before and the label was really interested in us. And then it was like, oh, actually, they don't want to sign you guys. And that was really sad. So when this next time came round, I remember all of us sort of feeling like, we'll go out there and sing in it, but I'm not like banking on this. So I remember I was so nervous that day. My voice was like not up to par. And anyway, I did my song. I sort of did it with my head like down the whole time as well. I did my song, I went off and I didn't expect anything from it. But then one of the people in the audience got in touch with Andy Gilbert and was like, you know, I'd love to manage her. So I got management off the back of that. And then, yeah, I was in studio straight away. I'd already started working with M&EK at the time. So we'd already met and wrote a song that also really interested this manager. It was just about going back into the studio of M&EK and just getting more of those songs done. And I did like a mini EP sort of thing of songs. And my manager then distributed that to labels and Gary Barlow picked it up and liked what he heard. And then that's it, I was thrust into it and I was now a signed singer and writer at the same time too. You know, one half of me was in sessions Monday to Sunday, actually. And the other half, whenever I had time in between, I'd make sure I worked on my artist project. I was so lucky that, you know, I had a friend who had a studio, M&EK, and we worked out of his, you know, his studio. I was able to go into studio with a bunch of other people and write. So it was a bit of both. At the end, though, I wanted to push my artistry more than I did my songwriting.
Who were you writing for at the time?
Everybody. And it wasn't necessarily people that were huge, like notable people. It was just about getting into the rooms with, you know, there's so many producers and songwriters that go unnoticed that, you know, at any given point have got a tune of theirs playing on the radio. There's so many of those people. So I did a lot of writing with people who were more behind the scenes, but had these massive cuts and were doing, you know, great things. So yeah, whenever people ask me that, I'm always like hesitant to like name drop because I'm just like, I just worked with really talented people.
Mm-hmm. How did Need You with Duke Jamal come around?
So Need You came about via my manager. So M&EK and I were in studio. We were writing for my stuff for what was going to be my debut album. And we just finished the session and I had forgotten that my manager had sent me this beat to work to. And it was late. It was probably like 11 p.m. or something. And we were like, oh my God, we just want to go home now. Like, we've done our session for the day. And I was like, no, like, let's power through. Let's do this tune. And we did it. And it's just so mad that the final version and the thing that so many people have heard is just me so tired and, like, not singing the song properly.
And it was a number one song.
It was.
Grammy nominated.
It was.
That is fucking mad.
The scenes were kind of crazy. I am not going to lie. I found out about the number one when we were in LA. So I was in LA writing for my album again, and... yeah, I remember we phoned in to, like, Radio 1 and they said it over the phone. You know, it was me, my management and my boyfriend at the time, and we're like, ah! And bear in mind, I'm 18, so I can't even drink legally.
In America.
In America. So I'm like, damn. And at this point, I was, like, obsessed with Malibu. Malibu was, like, my drink of choice. I was like, oh, I just want a Malibu and, like, pineapple. I need a shot of Malibu. Whoever drinks a shot of Malibu is ridiculous. I just remember... just literally being like, whoa. But I think it took me so long to grasp the gravity of, like, how big that was. And especially the Grammys. The Grammys was such a whirlwind that I always say to people, like, I forgot quite a lot of what happened because I just feel like it was too big for my brain to compute. Yeah. Here it is. A Grammy is something that I feel like when I'm at the pinnacle of my career... I get to be able to say, oh my God, I'm nominated for a Grammy. I never in anybody's wildest dreams did we think, you know, Need You was going to go top 100, let alone top 10, let alone number one. And so everything was just crazy. And because I was away from home as well, I guess, it kind of felt so surreal. But when I got back, we did, like, this massive celebration. And yeah, it's only in the later years, like the last few years, that I've been like, whoa, that was such a sick achievement. And I really should pat myself on the back. We're always, as creatives, we're always busy looking for the next thing. And our brains work so quickly that it's really tough for us to just stop and enjoy the moment. And ever since then, like, I've made it a point to celebrate the things that should be celebrated just within myself, you know. Just, like, take the second to go, oh, that was really cool. Like, let's move on and let's do something even better. But at the time, because I was just like, I need to finish my album, then I need to do this, I'm doing these gigs, there wasn't enough time to process the magnitude of it.
So what happened to your debut album?
A question. So before I had the chance to... well, it was still very much in the making, by the way.
Yeah, you said you was in LA, you was writing.
Yeah, so... it's tough when you're writing with new people who don't necessarily understand your sound from the get-go. So obviously you have to establish that relationship and get them to understand you. And you can't really do that in one session, in one day. So I had a bunch of songs. Some were incredible, some I was indifferent to, but they weren't cohesive. You know, it couldn't have been an album because I haven't worked with these people long enough for them to, do you know what I mean, be able to, like, Timbaland and Missy have got that connection and whatever. So the album, it never came together anyway as one cohesive project. But before I even had the chance to be able to release and stuff, my label got dissolved. So Future was dissolved. And then I moved over to Sony pretty much straight away, which again was just insane because I'd been offered that deal before I even signed to Future. And for it to still be on the table after was, yeah, insane. But yeah, the transition to Tops Henderson, who signed me at Sony, at Epic / Phonogenic, was, yeah, it was just as smooth because, again, they're just lovely, down-to-earth people who genuinely liked my music and genuinely wanted to see me go far. So they were invested and that made the world of difference.
Okay, so 2013 to 2019, mm-hmm. It's a big gap between releases. So yeah. What was going on? Like, what happened?
Life happened. Mm-hmm. Life happened. So I was at my Sony deal. That was going great. And Phonogenic also got dissolved. And when there was an offer of a third record deal on the table, I sort of politely declined. Just because at this point, I think I was 19, 20, and, you know, I hadn't done a lot of the things that people my age had done, and I hadn't learned how to drive, and I wanted to move out my mum's house, and there was so much that I wanted to do that I felt like if I got into another deal, you know, I'd have to focus on that, of course. I'd have to put all my attention and focus there. So I remember I took a couple of years just to assimilate to, like, real life and just actually enjoy, like, being a kid. So AME was a name that my management came up with. And, you know, it was very easy for me to be AME. But then you reach a certain point where being AME doesn't really get you anywhere anymore. And AME is the artist with the number one attached to her name, and AME is the artist with the Grammy attached to her name, Grammy nomination attached. But it wasn't doing anything for me. It wasn't opening doors for me. I wasn't, you know, being allowed into certain rooms off the merit of being AME. So I just felt like it was sort of just dragging me more than anything else a bit now. And I'd grown up, you know, time had passed, life experiences had changed me, and it just didn't feel right. I didn't connect with AME anymore.
Okay.
Kaba is my last name. And again, in finding my sound, you know, African music sort of seeped into some of the things that are on the EP. And, like, the second song, for example, samples my mum's favourite African song. And also, a lot of my friends called me Cabs, Kaba. That was always, like, a nickname friends gave to me. So, yeah, when I was starting this new process, it just felt so right to take on the name of my ancestors, really, and push that to the forefront.
Would you do it all again?
Hell to the yeah, yeah. Yeah, I would. I would, I would. It's been such a ride. If I could go back and do it with the knowledge that I had, even better. But, you know, I'd still do it all over again. It's been the most incredible few years of my life. And, yeah, I've spent a lot of time just thinking and thinking about all of the things that happened back then. And, yeah, the moments that I didn't stop finally actually allowing myself to just deep the whole situation and everything that happened in those years. And yeah, I'm so lucky and I'm so grateful. And I'm just excited for this new journey. And I just really hope that people are able to connect with this new version of myself. Or just, it's just me. It's just me. I'm just 25 years old with a different name and a different sound. But, you know, I'm still the same person. And I think this EP is really important for me because it's everything that I want to say, you know, in seven songs. Everything that you need to know about me as an artist is in this EP. So yeah, I'm really excited, but I would totally do it all again.